This Restorative Justice Life is a production of Amplify RJ. Follow us on all social media platforms at Amplify RJ, sign up for our email list, and check out our website at amplifyrj.com to stay up to date on everything we have going on. Make sure you're subscribed to this feed on whatever platform you're listening on right now so you don't miss an episode. And finally, we'd love it if you left us a rating and review. It really helps us literally amplify this work. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to This Restorative Justice Life, the podcast that explores how the philosophy, practices, and values of restorative justice apply to our everyday lives. I'm your host, David Ryan Barcega Castro Harris, all five names for the ancestors, and I'm the founder of Amplify RJ. On this podcast, I talk with RJ practitioners, circle keepers, and others doing this work about how this way of being has impacted their lives. Hi friends, David here. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably aware that it's just a small part of Amplify RJ, the platform that I started last March as a way to literally amplify restorative justice and teach people the work through a lens of abolition, anti-racism, and decolonization. I often say that RJ is about relationships, and the first relationship you have is the one with yourself. I'm definitely learning and unlearning a lot on this journey in my efforts to dismantle white supremacy culture in my own life. Some of the characteristics I'm fighting right now when it comes to this podcast are a sense of urgency and productivity over people. You might have noticed we took an unexpected break last week and no new episode was uploaded. Apologies to those of you who missed us, but relationships with our guests are more important to me than putting out content. I've recently recorded interviews with folks that felt good as a conversation in the moment, but in hindsight left guests feeling uncomfortable at the things being shared publicly. Normally, we've got a couple weeks of interviews banked, but the busyness of the summer and the hiccup in the interviews left us behind our production schedule, hence no episode last week. You might be saying, great job, David. The world didn't end without a new This RJ Life episode last week, and your relationships with the people you bring onto the podcast are stronger. True, but what about the relationship with myself? Well, at the time I'm recording this, it's 1 a.m. on Thursday, August 5th. Episodes of this podcast are usually published at midnight on Thursdays. It's a self-imposed deadline, but one that I've kept up for over 40 weeks. So why am I awake when I have a 6 a.m. flight because I'm traveling to facilitate a professional development workshop in person for the first time since before the pandemic? I should definitely be sleeping. My internalization of grind culture won't let me quit. So here I am, recording this, then doing a few edits, writing an episode description, and then uploading the podcast. All this to say, I'm definitely a work in progress and in need of some self-restoration and just some plain rest. So enough of this rambling. If you want to learn more about white supremacy culture, check out episode 18 of this podcast with Tema Okun. But today's episode is with Tlaloc Rodriguez. Tlaloc is an educator and circle keeper passionate about helping adults, children, and youth make sense of the mysterious realm of feelings so they can harness their power to enrich and mend their relationships. He teaches and practices these restorative ways with his wife, son, extended family, as well as his local community, and in his role as a school social worker at Orozco Academy in Chicago. Among other things, Tlaloc is a NAMA certified anger management specialist, an experienced self-enrichment teacher, and a proud U.S. Marine veteran. Our conversation spans all of these things and more, so let's get into it. And sorry about the suboptimal audio, we did our best. Tlaloc, welcome to This Restorative Justice Life. Who are you?
Who am I? I'm a male Latino, born in Chicago, son of Mexican immigrants. Yeah.
Who are you?
I am. I'm somebody who is very loving, caring. Not just for family, but like the world. I know it sounds a little cheesy there, but I recently have grown this outrageous love for humanity. Compassion has grown through the years.
Yeah. Who are you?
I am. I don't know why the word dude comes to mind. Somebody, a Gen Xer, born into the 80s, 70, late 70s, 80s, 90s. Somebody who's working towards breaking bad cycles that cause pain. Mm-hmm.
Who are you?
I am someone who is looking forward to making the world a better place, but also making humanity better people to get along with.
Who are you?
I am a pioneer, I think. I now have the confidence to share information, speak publicly like I am right now, and be in harmony with others. And I appreciate this time, David. Thank you.
Yeah. Who are you?
I am somebody who could be pretty different, but also at the same time has a strong connection with different people.
And finally, who are you?
I am a person of love. That's where I stand right now. Thank you.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being here. It's always good to start with a check-in. So the fullest extent that you want to share, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I can't complain. Health-wise, I feel great. emotionally, I'm telling you, I'm 46 years old, just turned 46, and I am at a way better place than I was back in my 20s. Yeah. Doing okay.
Yeah. With all that's going on, how have you been keeping yourself to this place where you're okay? Because, you know, a lot of us aren't right now.
I hear you. And believe me, you know, I had my tough moments. My mama passed away last year. I thought it was going to be the most devastating year of my life, but it actually was. It's quite the opposite. After my mom passing, I thought I was going to be at a very, very dark place, but thanks to my knowledge, the knowledge I have, what my mama taught me, and the support I have, and quite honestly, my truthfulness with myself, you know, and how I'm feeling through meditation, sitting through the pain that I experienced of losing my mom, actually sitting there with it, I think that's what helped me bounce back right away. I'm doing good. And it's something, again, that's the reason why I'm doing this, because I really want to share this knowledge with people.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for being here. You and I crossed paths. I think you're the first person who I've had on this podcast who I crossed paths with while I was doing this work in schools back when I was in Chicago. You're no longer at that school, but you are still doing this work as a social worker at Orozco Community Academy in Pilsen, the neighborhood that I used to live in, just like blocks away. I was down on, like, I think 21st and Levitt. But, you know, you've been doing this work for a long time, even before you knew the word restorative justice. In your own words, how did this journey get started for you?
I have to say it started, I think it was 2008, soon after, right from graduating from work on my MSW, became a school social worker, got hired in Des Plaines. I came across, I honestly don't remember how I came across with this group, Community Justice for Youth, mm-hmm. in the Englewood area. And there was, I was invited to a circle at Cook County Juvenile Justice there on Ogden. I went in there to join two priests and a group of young men, black and brown, in jumpsuits, you know, orange jumpsuits. And I went there. I sat through the circle, and I felt something, this connection. It's hard to explain, right? Put it into words, but I felt like this is me. This sounds right. This feels right, right? Facilitating, going through this circle. And it was a really nice experience seeing the young men being real with themselves, being real with others. It was a really nice experience. And
well, I was going to say, you know, that was your first experience with Circle. you could have done almost anything in the world, right? But you chose this line of work, working, well, one, social work, like serving community, but like specifically young people. Yes. What brought you into that?
What got me here is my own questions about my own upbringing, my own experiences early in life. So many questions, but nobody around to answer my questions. My mom was around, but you know, you have a Mexicana, you know, broken English, working these crazy jobs, right, that many people don't want to do. She did her best to answer some of my questions, right? But there were so many questions that I just, you know, had nobody to answer them, you know? So it was me pursuing knowledge. It was me choosing a field that is about, not just about me, but also about others. And the one that really resonated was social work. And honestly, you know, I was not interested in therapy or becoming a therapist, because many social workers want to be therapists. My aim is to educate, right? I am an educator, and I find myself doing that all the time, before, during, and after social work. And it's something that, the field of social work, it is what opened eyes, is what started to, you know, open the door for me to do what the kind of work I'm doing right now.
Yeah. And so as you were thinking about, you know, social work as a career, as a job, as a path, you ended up like gravitating towards schools because of the similar things that you just said. You were wanting to teach folks. And then you ended up somehow the Detention Center for Youth
it was an invitation. Yep.
In a circle with, I imagine it was probably Father Kelly.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was one of them. Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, what about that space, what about that process really resonated with you more than anything else than you had done within your social work training and practice?
Yeah, the space. You said the big word, space, right? Spaces that we really do not have. You know, at home, school, work, anywhere you go, we lack this space, right? And the space I was in was a space that was created by everybody to make it safe, you know? And when I say safe, not just physically, but emotionally safe, mm-hmm. knowing the fact that you're not here alone, that you're not going to be judged, right? Knowing that, hey, there's other people that are experiencing pain just like I am. Right. And the way they facilitated through music, drumming, you know, that was really nice. Something that I don't practice myself in circles, but it's always nice to have a drumming piece to the circle. Right. So all of that, you know, created rhythm, harmony, and the harmony allowed room to share. Right. So it was the listening that was, it was like amazing. Like, wow, people are listening here. And wow, I'm listening, right? I'm listening to every story here. So that kind of space is sacred to me and is important. And it's something that should be everywhere all the time. And it shouldn't be a space where you just go with one person. For instance, like in therapy sessions, it shouldn't be a space like that. It should be a space where I can go with many others, sit down, speak truth, speak our truth. And I envision, that's what I envision, that more spaces like this gets created naturally, you know, without fear. And that's where I stand right now. I sometimes fear criticism from colleagues, peers, within the field of mental health field. Right. You know, I think it's time for me to stand my ground and speak my truth and speak my opinions and what works. Honestly, you know, what I've seen works, you know, in my presence, under my watch, I see this work. It really works.
Yeah, well, here on this podcast, you're speaking to people who are looking for the ways that, you know, this works. So you met with Father Kelly, and I imagine some others, right? How did you continue to learn on that journey, right? Because, you know, you sit in one circle, that doesn't make you an expert, or like, it doesn't even make you a circle keeper. What came next?
What came next was by coincidence, or destiny, or whatever people want to call it, right? At Instituto, the staff there, they were trained through them. So there were a few openings in terms of sending staff over to get trained, a four-day training in becoming a circle facilitator. And I jumped in, I wanted to do it, and I did it, and I really enjoyed it. I was our trainer was Aura, who passed away.
Aura Yishub.
Yishub, yes, and I always keep her in my heart. Amazing facilitator, trainer, and that experience was great. I really, truly appreciate that training, and that's what got me more into this, right? So I started doing trainings that delve into positive youth development soon after that, over at South Dakota, Circle of Courage, trainings out there. And I've been doing that almost every summer until recently. Yeah.
And so you've done all of this learning around Circle, around positive youth development. How has that looked in the spaces that you've been in? You mentioned Instituto, which most people who are listening to this don't know, is an alternative school for young people who have who had encountered the criminal legal system, who have been kicked out of school, and this is in some ways like a quote unquote last chance space. And right when you've been told that you're no good, nothing good is going to happen from you, you're negative, all these negative things, right? That's not conducive to having someone want to grow and learn and even feel a part of community. A lot of social work tries to address that, but the approach that you've brought, both with Circle and your background in youth development, is different. What are some of the things that you've done, both at Instituto and in other places, that you've seen as different approaches than a traditional social work path?
Well, just to clarify, Instituto, it's a nonprofit organization that has two high schools, charter schools, right? One is Health and Sciences, and the other one is Justice and Leadership Academy. So we were at Justice and Leadership Academy, and that school is where, honestly, I learned a lot from youth. My teachers were my youth. Students were my teachers. And that was a space, again, you're right. It's a school where we took in students that were kicked out, pushed out, dropped out from other high schools. We took them in, and our setting, you walk into that space. When I first walk in there, it was like, wow, you feel this positive vibe. This is amazing. The people, the staff, everybody's by first name basis there, staff, they used to call me T there. It was just an amazing atmosphere. Right. And I'm like, this is awesome. And I felt like it was meant to be for me. it was a connection there. There is where restorative justice came into play. I learned more about that. I did a lot of independent study on restorative practices. I even got even deeper than that. I think there's a piece that we got to go deeper, and that's the emotional aspect of it, where that is having a clear understanding the emotional realm of the human existence, right, within circles. So I got way deeper there, and now this is the knowledge that I'm working towards sharing. I was in circles, staff sat down in circles, and we shared tear, we shared a lot, and it's what brought us closer together, and we became like a family. And to this day, I just had a conversation with a colleague, a former colleague there, who is still working there. We call it Rudy. We still call Justin Leadership Academy, and Rudy. Just to catch up, and I do not want to lose ties with the school. It's still there, still in existence, and I'm always grateful to have it, and don't mind facilitating circles there for them.
Yeah. Really quickly, for those who don't know who Rudy Lozano is, do you mind sharing why it's called Rudy Lozano Leadership? Is it not anymore?
It used to be called Rudy Lozano Leadership Academy, but through the years, it changed to Justice and Leadership Academy. But Rudy Lozano, when it first started, the alternative high school, is one of our leaders here in Chicago who was a civil rights activist. And he did a lot of good for the community, especially here in the Latino communities. But unfortunately, he was assassinated. But his spirit still carries on. And right here at Rudy, I mean, I'm still calling it Rudy.
Yeah, and I think back to the time, and I knew Rudy, Rudy Lozano Academy, Leadership Academy, by reputation, even before I worked there, as this space that you talked about, where, you know, sometimes people might think of alternative school, they might think metal detectors, harsh, like, very strict, and, like, can you describe even more, like, that welcoming environment? Like, what were, like, some of the logistical things that were happening? You kind of talked that, like, you know, staff were sitting in circles, students were sitting in circles, but, like, when students were coming in from spaces that had pushed them out, kicked them out, right? What were the processes that you used to make them feel that warmth, that sense of belonging?
Yeah. First of all, no metal detectors. No, none of that. We, you know, one of our agreements was assume goodwill, right, in everybody. So they walked in. It starts with us, right, to trust, mm-hmm. right? If you want a trustful community, I don't know if that's the right word, but trusting community, you need to show trust, right? Feel that trust. So that was the one thing, the big one, right? But there was a program where they're not doing this, it's my understanding right now, but when I started, every summer there was a bridge program where it involved a lot of circles, right? And new incoming students come into this bridge program and they sat through this, right? And it was quite an emotional roller coaster ride for many, right? And just seeing that change, that shift from like, hey, you're very worried about people around you, and then you come out like a family. You know, you come out like, okay, I'm part of something here.
Yeah.
So everybody showed respect to the Rudy spirit, you know, like it's automatic after this bridge programming that we used to have in place. But now, you know, in the culture itself, right, it's a culture of respect versus a culture of dominance where you get that everywhere else, right? But there, it was totally a culture of respect. And yes, don't get me wrong, there was arguments and conflicts, but we always resolve it through circles, right, or restorative conversations, which involved no judgment, you know, open honesty coming not just from students but staff too. You know, I've seen conversations between a teacher and student, you know, hashing out and having these real conversations and both crying and then you know, coming to resolving the conflict, right, and making the relationship a lot better. So I've seen that many times, and not just between students but between staff and students. So it was a way of being, a way of life, right? And it was so powerful that I even carried it over to my family, right? So I have within my family circles. We've been doing it. There were some tragedies that happened years ago, and we sat through it. We had conversations. We gathered, and that's our way of life. And now I have nieces and nephews in their mid-20s who are practicing this. I have one in particular who I'm very proud of who does this for a living, right? Who is doing restorative work.
Yeah. I think about how, you know, so many people would be like, oh, yeah, you have this program and, you know, people go through it and they're all on the same page. And that's true, right? But as we've said many times on this podcast, and you kind of just alluded to, like, restorative justice isn't a program, right? Mm. Restorative justice circles, they are a practice that yes. help you live life. It's a way of being, right?
Yes.
And so I'm curious, you know, I know you weren't the person who started this program, but like you were someone who carried it on for a long time and was a part of upholding that culture. Yes. When people, you know, saw this for the first time, I imagine there was some resistance. Can you describe the journey that people often took from resistance to like, acceptance and like belonging?
Yes. There was one person in particular who in the beginning, and this is a staff member, right?
Yeah.
Who was like, whoa, what is this, right? What is this kind of thing? And very reserved. But years later, the same person called it family. You know, this is my family. This is my home. This is my space. And just seeing that, you know, I myself, I'm the same way. I mean, I walked into it and I'm like, man, this is where I learned to be human, right? This is my space here. And now I'm carrying on this practice everywhere else I go. At Orozco, for example, I've done already with staff member circles, with parents, I did circles.
When I am teaching this work, when I'm sharing this work with people, the people who come voluntarily to workshops are people who are like on board. Yes, I actively want to learn this. The question that so often gets asked is, you know, what do we do with the people who are resistant? In some ways, like, and I think that question comes from multiple perspectives. One, it's like, we don't want to give this work to someone who is resistant and they use it as a tool and just cause more harm without like
yes.
taking those attitudes and practice and like it breaking, you know, cycles of dominance and moving towards shared power.
Yes.
And like, you can still use restorative process questions in a way that's holding power over people, right? You can yeah. still hold circle in a way that is holding power over people. So there are people who are resistant to that power sharing dynamic mm-hmm. and really being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so I think you did answer in some ways that, you know, giving people the opportunity to be in this kind of space takes time, right? You talked yes. about how this summer bridge program happened before school started, and so you could kick off school mm-hmm. together in a good way. I don't think that there's a one-size-fits-all solution to all of these things, right? Because what worked for, right, 150 people in that bridge program does not necessarily translate to a school of thousands or, you know, more hundreds. But there are ways to carve out that time for relationship building to, you know, one of the other things that you shared is like, you know, we agreed as a community, no metal detectors, right? There were conversations mm-hmm. around that leading up to that mm-hmm. where people weren't necessarily on board, but came to understand that, you know, in order to create this welcoming environment, we do need to be vulnerable and ask people to come with good intent
yes.
and make this a space that is physically safe in addition to emotionally safe for everyone.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well said, David. That piece there where I've learned that you have to be vulnerable, and, you know, and that's like the essence of all this, right? Vulnerability is to be human, right? And they see those that are very resistant, they see it. And I think the modeling piece is very important, right? Where I always say, right, I when there's something new, I like to throw myself into the fire, right? Because I want to experience it. And if it doesn't go well, it doesn't go well. If it goes well, hey, went well. At least I experienced it. I allow myself to experience, right? Whether it be pleasure or pain, whatever. Right? The thing is that I'm accepting of what I am experiencing, my feelings, right? So modeling this and inviting, right? That's the other word I want to throw out there too, that invitation is key, mm-hmm. right? Forcing people that, okay, that's cultural dominance. Okay, you're done. You know, like, oh, you're totally doing non-restorative work if you're forcing people to join in or whatever. right? It's strictly invitation, right? And it's something that you know, it's very difficult for some people to grasp or even do it, because again, we're programmed to be a certain way, right? Especially here in the States, we live in a society that is all about revenge, you know, and it's all about dominance. And I'm like, come on, man. It's something that, you know, the courage is not there. I always tell people there's two types of courage. There's loud courage. We're like, yeah, loud I am. And then there's quiet courage.
For right? those of you who aren't watching this, he just beat his chest. That was that sound.
Thank you. But it's just people, you know, expressing loud courage, right? You hear it in protests. You hear it in sits. It's great, right? We need that. But also for humanity to connect, right? For people to really come together, we need that quiet courage, right? And I'm putting those two words out, you know, I'm even considering of working on using as a brand, I have it as a brand, right? But it quiet courage is critical, right? Yeah. It is the piece where people are scared to go, right? Yeah. And so my job is to help people go there where they don't want to go.
And I think, you know, people don't want to go there because people do get hurt when they put themselves out there. Can you think of a time in the process, maybe at Instituto, maybe somewhere else, where, you know, you made yourself vulnerable or the community made themselves vulnerable and, you know, it didn't go the way that you hoped?
Yeah. Me personally, I do not... I made myself vulnerable many, many times, and it never backfired on me. I never had anybody use that against me, you know, and it's interesting, right? But I can see those that, you know, who had very bad experiences. I can see where the wall stands, right? And my wall is always up too. It's always, and I'm always working on, you know, the only time that I feel that my wall is down is when I'm in circle with people. And that's why I need to sit in circles. So it's not just me helping other people, but I'm helping myself too when I sit in circles. And that's when my wall goes down, right? And I've learned that I always walk out feeling great after a circle, right? Whether I facilitated or somebody else facilitating, I walk out with a load off my chest, so to speak. Right. And but personally, I never had anybody do anything malicious and I have not seen anybody actually in my time with the youth. I never seen anybody use what they learn in a circle against that person. I never experienced anything like that. There's a lot of research out there that you know, there's what they call co-regulation, right? We at the biological level, right, we're connecting. We are experiencing what others are experiencing in the moment, and that's what brings people together, right? And that's what calms the nerves, right? Or what they call the sympathetic nervous system is when it's calm.
Yeah.
Right? And then the parasympathetic kicks in, and that's co-regulation, because you're seeing the other person, you're hearing the other person, and same thing, like the other person's seeing me, hearing me, and I can see the expression on their face, right? I think they call it, within the field of restorative practice, they call it affective resonance, right? Where that person is expressing the same thing what I'm expressing from my own person, my own face, right? So there's that connection, right? And that's what helps that emotional safety, as they call it, right? It's set in. Honestly, and have not witnessed anything like that backfired. That's a good question though. I need to do some reflection and look back.
Because my follow-up to that, when you have the stories like, all right, and what did your community learn from that? And I'm encouraged to hear, right, like you don't have that experience, right? There is like this beautiful thing when we create those spaces, and you know, when we explicitly say, you know, what happens in circle stays in circle, right?
Yeah.
And you've built that trust and safety with people that, you know, people do take care of each other. One of those seven core assumptions of restorative justice, right? Human beings want to be in good relationship. Yeah. There is a lot of spaces where we want to continue to take care of each other. And when we build the spaces, right, and invite people, not force people into those spaces, people are a lot more willing to trust. And I'm not saying that these practices work 100% of the time. There is still risk, right? But more often than not, especially in the experience that you shared where, like, you know, you can't really think of something, people are willing to hold that space for each other. There are like very technical things that we're doing to set up those spaces and very intentional things. It's not just say like, hey, everybody, we're going to circle up and be vulnerable right now, like without having like built relationships before and doing things to build that container. But that's really important. Something that you said, like I heard a contradiction and maybe you can clarify it for me. You talked about how like you walk around with your walls up all the time and circle is the space where you let those down. I've never experienced you as someone with their walls up walking around in the world. And maybe that's because like within the context of our interactions, we were in Instituto where like while we were not physically sitting in circle, most of the time we were together, like we were in that circle space, circle-like space where that was present. Can you explain or clarify what you meant by like you walk around with your walls up most of the time?
All right, so I'm going to share, and this is the share part. I'm going to share something very, very personal, right? When I say that, you know, we all have walls, we all have fears, right? And I like splitting it into two different types of, you know, just for the sake of understanding, right? In the emotional realm, right? I'm not saying that there's two different kinds of people, no. We're all the same, we all experience stuff like this, right? But, you know, there's people who are very fear-driven, right? Pain-based. And then there's people who are very anger-driven, pain-based. Right. So you see these types of behaviors that are fear driven or types of behaviors that are anger driven. Right. And just, you know, for the sake of understanding humanity, I use that to help me do my work. Right. And I'm one of those individuals who are fear based. Right. I'm very scared of living. Right. I'm scared of life itself because of my trauma. Right. And I share this with everybody. Right. I'm scared of losing people I love, you know, right? Or I'm scared of losing myself and seeing my son missing his dad. And the reason, the connection there is because when I was a kid, when I was 4 years old, 5 years old, actually, 5 years old, that's when parents divorced, dad was gone, disappeared, right? And I'm like, a five-year-old, like, dad's gone, right? Somebody who loved me, who carried me, who played with me, and now all of a sudden he's gone. And then 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20s, where's dad? Where's dad been? You know, so that pain that, you know, is carried over through the years and from it becomes sadness, from sadness, anger, rage, depression, whatever people want to call it, right? But it's that pain that was carried over. And to this day, I fear losing my son, right? I have a 10-year-old son. I fear losing him, right? So I have that fear, and I can be overprotective at times. And believe me, you know, I can be overprotective, right? But I have these real conversations with my son, and I explain to him, you know, hey, listen, son, I apologize. The reason why I did this, you know, and I'm going to try to cut it down, you know, it's because I'm scared of losing you. I'm teaching him at a very early age to be real with himself, right? To be real with others and express pain, express feelings. And man, I don't know, man, I have a strong connection with my son. And, you know, I really, really enjoy these experiences. But, you know, deep inside and being honest with the public, hear me out, you know, I'm scared, man. I'm scared of life. But what's interesting here is I'm accepting of that. I'm accepting it. I know where it's coming from, right? Through my own meditation, you know, my own journey, right? I know where it's coming from. I'm able to pinpoint this, right? And I'm at a better place now because I'm speaking my emotional truth, and that's what really. I'm at a better place because of that, you know. Right now, sharing this with you, I feel a lot better right now. And it's, this is what, this is the example, you know, I want to set for to the world that, hey, man, be real with yourself, right? We tend to hide our stuff, right? Because we're scared and it's okay.
Yeah.
Right? But where do we share it? Where do we express it? Right. So that's where it's mind blowing for me. Like, really? We don't have spaces like this. The world needs spaces everywhere.
Well, I'm laughing because, you know, this is a walls down moment for you, right?
Yeah.
And like that, this is how I generally experience you moving through life. But like, as you're navigating life, where like maybe we're not as present to, you know, the ways that we want to be, and not as aware of like the why behind like the fears that we're feeling or the anger that we're feeling, that's where those walls come up to protect us. And I think like that exists for a reason. I'm not going to put a value of good or bad on it, right?
Yeah.
But thank you for clarifying that for me.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, right now you're working in a school that is much more of a traditional setting, right? Neighborhood school where, you know, K through eight, as a social worker there, how have you brought restorative justice practices?
Last 3 years, I mean, the school when I came in, they had a mindset for restorative practices, and it's a great school. I mean, the staff, they're amazing staff, right? And the families, wow. But what I noticed is that you still see a little bit of that culture of dominance, right? The way we're programmed to be, so the way that I'm trying to make it an emotionally safer space, because physically, you know, it's safe, but the emotional part, right, is where everybody, inclusive, everybody is okay with each other, right? Is by putting myself out there, right? Sharing my personal story with parents that I come across with, making connections with parents, volunteer to do a presentation through PAC, you know, the Parent Advisory Council and stuff like that, right? Just putting myself out there, you know, and hey, if they like what they hear, all right. It's an opportunity, you know, I see the opportunities to share, right? And to try to help create these kinds of spaces. And yeah, I was invited to do a circle for parents, and I did one, and man, that was amazing. That was awesome. The parents are, wow. I love working with parents. And I did one with the staff, a couple with the staff. I did one in person and another one virtually. And I was surprised. It was my first time doing a virtual circle. Man, it works. It really does work. You know, you just gotta, you know, tweak things a little bit, but you can actually do a circle virtually. So it's, and it all starts with me being honest with myself, honest with others. Transparency is key, and throwing a little bit of humor there, you know, it's important to laugh it up a little, right? Ease off those nerves that we all come into this space, right? Like, oh man, this is a scary space. Our guard is up. So how can we help people lower that guard despite, you know, modeling it?
Yeah. Well, you know? I mean, I love that you're like re-emphasizing that, like, the model and the invitation and putting yourself in locations where this work can happen, right? If you had sat back and waited for a direction from someone to say like, all right, we're going to do this thing with parents, like, this isn't necessarily this, you wouldn't necessarily have the community that you've built. You wouldn't necessarily have the relationships built. So like, I do want to be careful with balancing, like, you know, there are systemic things that we need to do that need to shift. There are cultural things that need to shift. And those cultural shifts often happen because of individuals who push and put themselves in those positions. Where in your case, right, there was already a culture of invitation and openness to this. I know some of the people who are listening, like, that's not necessarily the case for them. But, you know, it does take individuals inviting people who exist within the power structures into seeing things another way. I'm curious, like, within those parenting spaces, because, you know, we don't often talk about that. We often hear, we're more often talking about like things between colleagues and things with students. What are some of the things that have happened within those parenting spaces that, you know, keeping confidentiality, that you would be okay sharing? not necessarily like what happens in the circle, but like as a result of the circle, right? And I don't want to be in this place where I'm saying like, oh, just like, because I wholly believe that like having that process and people going through that process is good just for the sake of having built that relationship and shared. But what is the impact that that's had on the community?
On the community.
Yeah.
Parents requesting circles again. That's the feedback I get a lot. They want more. After the fact, I had parents actually come up and they want hugs. You know, like it's just the closeness. That, but in terms of any feedback, I did not receive anything like that. I remember doing a circle with lawyers, and that went really well. I had one lawyer come up to me and just like felt so like grateful, and I got a hug. You know, like can I hug you? Like, sure, why not? Go ahead. And you know, it's just that connection that it creates. So in terms of confidentiality, I don't recall having ever had an issue like that. I do have one thing with students, and this is where, wow, it's just mind blowing, and be mindful of this. I had two students sat down, and we facilitated the conversation. They worked things out, they resolved the conflict. But interestingly, the next day, one of the students' parents called the school and wanted to talk to me, complain about why did my daughter, who was 18 at the time, you know, she could choose, but she wanted to know why did she sat down in a circle and have a conversation with this person. I don't want her to talk to her. So the parent, the mindset that I was getting from this person is like, no, never stand down, always fight back, kind of thing. So that culture of dominance was very strong in that household. And so the parent was upset that they resolved conflict peacefully. And for me, that was like, whoa, you know, and I don't know. I mean, confidentiality was broken, I guess, there when the daughter spoke to the mom about the other students. I don't know. It was mind blowing where they resolved conflict. Everything was great. But then the next day, mom was upset that they resolved conflict that way. So, wow. So be prepared for stuff like that, because you do get a lot of people whose perception, again, you know, it could be a little bit distorted.
Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to think. Is there anything else that I'm thinking about? This is mostly unrelated from the things that we've talked about. On the bio that you shared with me, you put like proud Marine veteran, right? And when I hear that, and I knew that about you before, right? That's not the vibe that you give off most of the time, right? And when I think about the Marines and I think about the U.S. military, I think about power over and dominance. How do you reconcile those ideas?
Yeah, good question. Well, when I say proud, I'm really proud of myself for putting through that experience, right? And this is where I guess the identity question, right? I don't like to identify myself, you know, Latino, Marine, you know, teacher. I'm right now at a place where I'm actually getting into this spiritual journey, right? And so going back to that, I want to make let the world know that I went through this. I experienced this. Mm-hmm. And I know there's other, because in the Marines, especially in the Marines, right? There is this, you go through hell together, right? And you come out as a Marine, and it creates this connection, right? This strong connection, just the same as a circle. You go through hell together, you know, not just in a circle is more emotionally than it is physically. You know, in the Marines, it's a lot of physical work, right? A lot of physical pain. But in circles is a lot of emotional pain, right? And we go through this hell together, and then we come out together, right? From circles. Same thing with the Marines, right? Interestingly, you know, you go in and then you come out strong, and you have this, is this the Marine family, right? So if I go out on the street and I had Marines, you know, former Marines, but there's no such thing as a former Marine. You're always a Marine. That's the thing, right? We have that, and it's a beautiful culture where, in terms of, and when I mean culture, a culture of respect within the Marines, right? And yes, Marines can be very dominant, right? And I get that, you know, the dominance piece, you know, worldview of it. But the point what I'm trying to say is that it's a family of mine that, you know, we went through hell together, physical pain where we experienced and emotional pain. And so off the street, somebody knows me as a Marine, I know as a Marine, like, hey, you know, there's a brotherhood, even though that we're complete strangers. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's something very sacred as well. Right. So I put that there because I have peers that went through that pain and they're out there. Right. And I take pride in that, right? And that sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm not one of those gun loving dudes right now, man. No, I'm very like I said, when you ask those questions, yeah, about who am I, I'm very different, dude. And I don't want to be like anybody else. I want to be me.
I imagine there had to have been a transition from like that kind of mindset to where you are now. I mean, this probably would have been helpful to have like at the beginning of the conversation, but like, do you mind sharing a little bit of that journey?
No, I don't mind. You know, very simple, right? In a few words, from a killing mentality to a healing mentality, right? That's my journey. The Marines I joined because of, you know, at the time, right, the media, you know, programmed us, you know, be proud and blah, blah, blah. And I just had this desire to serve, you know, but I was 23. I was really not sure where to go with life. Again, no guidance, right? Mm-hmm. Papa was out of the picture for quite some time, right? And mentors, I really didn't have consistent mentors at all. So I was pretty much on my own, right? So I end up joining the Marines to get my education paid, right? And the other, just to, I felt like I need to serve. And for me at that time, that was, I guess, my way to serve. You heard that little laugh there, right?
Yeah.
But it was a service, you know? I sacrificed my life out there, man, right? This is a whole conversation, man. I have some really, really, really different views about things. But,
I think part of me is knowing that one of my wife's cousins who just graduated high school, like, he's enlisting, and like, his family is like, why?
What?
Like, no, like, what is happening? And so, like, when you said that, like, that's what's coming up for me, it's like, oh, you're this person who's like very different from, I imagine, the person who went into the Marines, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, he has like ideas of serving and like, you know, getting school paid for, wanting to do things with robotics and all that. And like,
wow.
I get that, but like, that is like, you said serve, but then like, you know, reframed it to like sacrifice your life, to give up your life to an organization, a government that doesn't care about you, let's be honest. Mm-hmm. That's just something that like is personal for me right now, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. I hear you, and there's a lot of mixed feelings with that, right? And I have a 10-year-old son, right? I don't want him to join. Mm-hmm. No, I don't want him to join. No. But in the end, what he chooses is what he chooses, right? And I'll accept. It's a lot of mixed feelings, right? And I'm just gonna put it out there. My experience at age 46 right now, there's three things that splits people apart: tribalism, which, you know, I'm U.S., I'm Mexico, I'm Canada, I'm this, I'm that, right? Tribalism, politics, right? I can't stand politics, and religion, right? Those three organizations, those three institutions is what splits people apart, right? Separates people, separatism. And you know, it's painful. It's painful, a lot of mixed feelings with those three things, you know. But I'm at a place right now where, like I said, you know, I'm on a spiritual journey, and it's something where I think we need to have more conversations about, right? Like, really get to the root of things. But it all starts with honesty, with emotional honesty. That's where restorative practices, you know, comes into play, where we create these spaces where people can have these conversations, right? Learn from each other, all right? Because I was a hardcore, you know, like, mess with the best, die like the rest kind of thing, you know? But then I started to see see other, my brothers and sisters, you know? Just seeing people as me. You are my other me, right? That's where tribalism, I see that's what causes us to separate each other and see each other differently and thus hate each other. I'm like, no, man, can't go there.
Thank you so much for taking that that detour and bringing us right back. I want to transition to the questions that I ask everyone as we start to think about closing. This is supposed to be a speed round, but it's very rarely a speed round. Define restorative justice.
Community building, connection. I'm a man of few words, I'm sorry.
No, that's all good. You get to sit in circle with four people, living or dead. Who are they, and what's the question you ask the circle?
Man, I don't know why Gandhi came to mind. Martin Luther King Jr. are those that were nonviolent, right? Living or dead, Trump. I would love to have a conversation with Donald Trump. See what's that all about, right? My mama came to mind.
Okay, so your mom, Donald Trump, Gandhi, and Dr. King. What is the question you ask that circle?
What makes people a better person? What makes a person a better person? I don't know, what makes us better, right? And just to hear them out and then see I just want to see the connection there.
Beautiful, so interesting. With that third person you threw in there, I'm trying a new way of phrasing this question. So I want to invite you to imagine restorative justice in a situation or a place where you wish that you witnessed recently that you wish people really knew this work.
I would love to see that at my son's school, where they're being, it's a very diverse school, and you know, they say it's restorative. They do restorative practices, circles among students, but I would like to see parents sit in this. I would like to see them experience, because you have a mixed income as well. You have people who are pretty well off, mm-hmm. parents, and then you have parents that are not so well off, and having them sit in and have circle processes would be key, because there has been a lot of conflict. There's a lot of blame. So I think among parents at my son's school would be great. I would love to see that there. And I think you already said it, you know, I would love to see restorative justice in among, you know, the Senate, like, you know, these guys, these politicians, right? Actually sit down and experience this. So anything specific, I'm sorry, I can't come up with anything.
No worries.
In particular.
Worries. No, the answer about your son and the parents at his school was
I would love to see
perfect.
That.
What is a mantra or affirmation that you want to leave everyone listening right now with?
Those four words, powerful four words, just to remind you that, you know, you find yourself hurting others or hurting yourself is because you carry pain that it's unresolved. Hurt people.
Right. Two more questions. Who's one person that I should have on this podcast? And you have to help me get them on.
One person?
Yeah.
Let's see. Do you know, maybe reach out to this other, Edwin from Rudy.
Oh, well.
Do you know him?
No, I don't, but you can introduce us.
Yeah. Okay, I'll reach out to him. A really fun guy too.
And then last question. How and where can people support you and your work in the ways that you want to be supported?
Well, it's interesting. Today, this morning, I got the Living Justice Press. Have you heard of them? Living Justice Press. They have an updated website, and now, like, especially for people who are circle practitioners, they have a listing there where they can contact you, right? Yeah. So they recently updated, so it looks really nice. All of us, I know my posting is up there, so I can send that forward that to you, the link, just to get an idea, you know. And I love what they're doing, right? They're bringing us together, circle facilitators, and, you know, make themselves known and be out there to be called on, or you know. But they also have, like, you know, publishings. It's a really nice website.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually how I was reminded to reach out to you. So definitely check them out. I was, like, going through people, and I was like, oh, yeah, Tlaloc, there you go.
Okay, cool.
So definitely check them out to everyone who's listening, for not just their circle people, but for all the books that they've put out. And we've talked to some of the people who have been authors who have been published through there as well. Thank you so much, Tlaloc, for spending time with us. Is there any other things that you want to leave the people with?
No, that, hey, I love you guys. And I'm not just saying it. I really, really do. And please share that love. Allow yourself to love. And it starts with you loving yourself.
Beautiful. Well, thank you, everyone, so much for listening. Thank you, Tlaloc, for sharing your wisdom, your experiences. We'll be back with another episode next week. Take care till then. Like what you heard? Please subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast on whatever platform you're using right now. It really helps us further amplify this work. You can also support us by following us on our social platforms, signing up for our email list, rocking our new merch, joining our Patreon, or signing up for a workshop. So many options! Links to everything in the show notes and on our website, amplifyrj.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.